Welcome to the West Coast Project podcast for Orange is the New Black, Season 2, Episode 5, Low Self-Esteem City. My name is Mike.
And I'm Michelle.
Hi, Michelle. You sound like you have a cold or something.
A little head cold, maybe. Just a little bit.
Okay, well, you're going to be a trooper and hang in there. It's another late night for you.
It's okay. Yeah, it's a little late, but that's okay.
So we haven't done much hyping of our podcasts and our website, so I thought I'd do a little bit of that right off the bat. So
okay, good.
West Coast Project, we've done a couple shows. Michelle and I have done a couple shows. I've done a couple other podcasts on other things. But if you look at westcoastproject.com, you can see just about everything we have up there. And there's some Fargo TV, Louis C.K. We did Louis C.K. show. Of course, we're doing Orange is the New Black. We've done some True Detective. We've done some comments on other crazy social stuff that was just music from the past. We did Lost in the Closet for one episode. So just some crazy social stuff. So if you want to look at everything we have, you can find it all on westcoastproject.com. We have a few Facebook sites too, and all of those are linked into all the website information on West Coast Project, so you can find it all there. And what else? What am I missing, Michelle?
I think you touched on about everything that we've done. I was wondering, do you know when we started? When's our anniversary, Mike? I hope you remember. I'm kind of putting you on the spot. I can't remember. I don't know how long ago it's been. It's been a while. We've been doing it for a little while now. You and I have, and I know you were even doing it a little before and had some other people off and on.
Yeah, I've had friends on. I have a good friend who's a comedian, Casey. He's done some podcasting with me. So it's all just a kind of a learning process. And
yeah, and you did the podcast, the one podcast with the Bald Move guys. That was really good. That's on there. So lots on there.
I also just put one up for Better Call Saul because it's way, way before that show's going to start. But I figured I'd try to get a jump on that. And I don't know what the plan is for that yet, but that's up there. There's even a Better Call Saul podcast page on Facebook/ Better Call Saul podcast. And a bunch of people from the Fargo and Louis pages have already joined that. So,
oh, cool.
So you can find a lot about the whole project on westcoastproject.com. And here we are this week with Orange is the New Black. We're almost halfway through.
You know, you and I have done enough of these and discussed this enough to know that some episodes have to be episodes that are building episodes that take us from one kind of step to the next. And I think that's mainly what this one was, but the backstory and stuff made it good, and I thought it was pretty good. What'd you think?
I like Gloria's story, although I have some questions about it that maybe I can bounce off you and see what you think.
Okay.
I read a lot of stuff online, and I follow a few people. Ellen Seppenwall is one of the best critics, I think, online, and he has a website called Hit Fix and does some podcasting. And he does two of these at a time because it's a Netflix production and they're all released at the same time. You can watch them all. You just sit and watch them all in a row. But he does two at a time every week. And so this week he did this one, and the next one is something about a pizza. You also have a pizza. So he did this one and that one together. And I'm going to read a little bit of what he said about both of this episode and the next episode, episode 6.
Okay, good.
So he says, there are also the first pair of episodes where I clearly preferred one to the other. Low Self-Esteem City is a good peace mover episode, and getting some background on Gloria, a character we don't know very well despite her big power position in the series. This is useful. But the flashback to Poussey's life as a teenage military brat in Germany was more emotionally powerful than Gloria's tale of domestic abuse in Santeria. Of course, he's talking about next week's or episode 6. I thought the exact opposite, Michelle. I thought this episode with Gloria's backstory was more powerful than Poussey's.
Well, I wasn't really comparing it with next week. I think I was comparing it with last week more, and Lorna's episode just blew me away. So I think maybe comparing it to that, it wasn't as as deep or rich an episode as we just did a few days ago. But compared to next week, I would really have to think about it. I don't know.
It's interesting how some people's stories, or some people's pathways, I guess you could say it more accurately, allow them to slip into these lives of crime. Lorna's story was kind of an emotional need that she had to fill. That brought her into this prison. And Gloria's is one of survival. I think that brings her into the situation she's in now.
Well, and I think, too, that what makes us yearn for the backstory and yearn to hear it is directly related to how much currently they show us about it. And they haven't shown us very much about Gloria. We don't know a lot about her except just that she's a powerful woman in there. She's the leader. She's the mother. She's the nurturer. But we don't really know anything. With Lorna, she's talked about Christopher the whole time and about her wedding and all that kind of stuff. And then they've never let us see Christopher visit her. So we've got all these questions in our mind that we've thought about. And I think maybe with Gloria and even with Poussey and some of the others, we don't hear a lot about their lives as they're going about their day-to-day life in here. So we don't yearn for that backstory, which is maybe what makes it connect more. Certainly with me, maybe with other people as well.
Yeah, and for me as a guy, watching Lorna's backstory was easier for me to understand than for me to understand Gloria's story. It's really difficult for me as a guy to see Gloria's story, because even in her real life before prison, she was a pretty strong woman. She had figured out this scam where she could essentially provide for her family. And this creepy loser of a guy like rocks her world and essentially takes control over her. That's hard for me to envision as a guy. I wonder why she doesn't just walk from that. And I know there are a lot of complicated reasons why not, but it was easier for me to understand Lorna than Gloria in that sense.
Yeah, I think all that just depends on your background and where you come from and stuff. I think as a female, we can maybe more closely identify with allowing unhealthy men in our lives, probably more than you could identify with a situation like that. So
a little bit more about what Seppenwall says. He says the Gloria flashback played out interestingly, watched so close to the end of Fargo when the Santeria curse, or at least the candles in the new back door, finally claimed the life of her abusive boyfriend. I began making Stavros Milos, and this is Seppenwall speaking, I began making like Stavros Milos, saying, God is real, God is real. Still, it was the first flashback of the season that had me impatient to get back to the current events at Litchfield, especially because things are now so complicated. We now have three different contraband operations running at once, with Red sewer pipe, V's tobacco source, and Bennett smuggling things in the hollow of his prosthetic. Of course, he's still referring to the future episode that we're not going to talk about until next week. But that's Seppenwall's take on where everything is so far in the series.
I find myself going to his website time and again. I try not to do it before we podcast it, though, because I don't want to be swayed by it like we've talked about. But I always enjoy it when I do go there, and I always get another take on it. So I'd recommend anybody do that. So,
yeah, it's good. It's a good source of information, and I don't know if I hopefully don't incorporate everything I've read in what I try to say when we talk, but you know, I like getting his take on these kinds of things.
Yeah, and sometimes I really agree, and sometimes I really don't agree, and I like that, so.
So to start out the episode, we see the Latinas in this crap-ass bathroom / locker room, shower room. Before the crap starts coming up through the drains, it's still a crappy, dirty-looking, horrible place. But then they do see this crap come up through the sewers. The sewers are all messed up. Just these conditions that these guys are in is just horrible.
Yeah, that was not good. I mean, what a situation for disease, and it was horrible.
You can't touch anything. They're wearing shoes and flip flops wherever they have to walk, and just, you wouldn't want to touch anything except your own body and your bar of soap.
Mm-mm, not at all.
So what happens? They have to go and share the black shower room because theirs is so messed up, right?
Well, they just go in there. The Latinas have to go make breakfast. And so they go in the black bathroom and kind of try to walk to the front of the line to, particularly with Gloria. Well, Gloria walks into her own bathroom first, to the Latina bathroom. And they pull a girl out of the shower with soap in her hair for Gloria to go. And I think that's just showing us that Gloria has that kind of power and influence. It's like, look, when she comes in, you get out. But also, it had more to do, I think, with the fact that these girls, they have to go do breakfast, and they got to be there early and do that kind of stuff. And we've seen a couple times that these girls get shots if they're late. So nobody wants to be late to their jobs either. But aside from not wanting to be late, these girls need to go make breakfast for everybody else. So they felt like they had the right to go to the black bathroom and go to the front of the line so they could shower. Now we find out when that happens that Black Cindy, I think, or Pusey? I think it was Black Cindy, who she's gotten two shots already for being late to her job. And so she's particularly upset. And of course, V, as usual, is in there egging it on.
Yeah, we also see Flocka fighting with some of the black girls. And, you know, I don't know if you've watched any of this World Cup soccer, Michelle, but Flocka pulls a classic flop when she gets pushed. She's like, oh, she falls over. And World Cup is just rife with this. It's just appalling. Have you watched any of the soccer games?
I did. Yeah, I did watch some
it's,
of it.
As a person who likes sports, I like to watch sports. I like to play sports. It's appalling, man. It defies athleticism. The sportsmanship sucks. The sportsmanship in all these other types of competition, whether it's football, baseball, they're pretty honorable. They respect their fellow athletes. You know, they have fights sometimes, but they never flop to try to cheat to get an advantage. And World Cup soccer is just all full of all kinds of fake injuries. Oh, you hit my leg. Oh, I hurt. I carry me off. They run back on the field a minute later. It's just so dishonorable. I don't know. That's what I thought of when I saw Flocka. The World Cup ended today, so just the coincidence of these two things made me think of it.
Didn't you make comment about LeBron James when we were doing a Louis podcast? And that's
they flop in the NBA too. Not as much as soccer, but yeah, LeBron does that too. He gets a lot of calls because he's the best player in the league and he's like the superstar, so he gets a lot of favorable calls. But he works that to his advantage by flopping. He falls over when he doesn't really get pushed, you know.
I've known you for a long time, and it just tickles me to hear the passion in your voice about this kind of thing. I really can tell how much you feel about that, which is pretty interesting.
Well, we see Flocka do it, and they just laugh at her. That's the ending. The end note on this is it's just laughable how pro sports people try to do it, and Flocka's doing it here in the shower room.
Well, and Black Cindy calls the black guard, and I don't remember her name. Do you, the black female guard?
Sister. Her name's Sister.
Her name's not... No, Black... Is it? Cindy
no,
calls
she
her?
Calls her Sister okay. And gets
yeah,
nailed for
yeah, she does
it.
Not like that at all. And
So rank in life overrules rank by race very clearly. This black guard does not want to help Black Cindy over Flocka. She's the guard. Cindy's the prisoner. That's rule number one. And she's
right. And plus, she's just going by what she saw. And she saw Flocka get knocked down for all she knew. Or knocked back.
No, the message is don't call me Sister. I'm on a different level of society than you. You're a prisoner. I'm a guard. Not what was right about the argument. It was like, I'm black, you're black, but I'm a guard, you're a prisoner. Now, here's why I got some questions about Gloria. Gloria's name is Floricita, right? In the earlier flashback?
I didn't catch that, so I don't know.
Okay, well, the older woman that's with Floria, we see Gloria in her bodega back in her flashback days. The older woman is Gloria's aunt, right?
I wasn't 100% sure what her relationship was, but that sounds like that might be it. Yeah, her name was Lourdes. Is that right? Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah, Lourdes.
Okay.
So, yeah, because the kids call, or Gloria calls the other woman, Lourdes, Tia, in front of the kids. But I think she's calling her Tia because Tia is, of course, Spanish for aunt, but I think she's Gloria's aunt. I thought she might be her older sister, in which case she would be the kid's aunt, but she's older than Gloria.
Yeah, she's older than Gloria. I wasn't even sure that she wasn't supposed to be Gloria's mother for a little while, but then that didn't seem to be it. But
yeah, if she was Gloria's mother, there'd be no reason for Tia. She was Gloria's sister. The kids would be, she'd be the kid's aunt. But I think she's Gloria's aunt. She's the right age, and
right.
And
I agree.
You could see a mom calling her aunt Auntie in front of the kids, so the kids would call her aunt as well.
Oh, sure.
What's the one generation removed for aunt? Great. They're not going to call her great auntie. Just going to call her Tia, auntie.
Right.
So anyway, we see Gloria's bodega, and there's a couple different roles for people in the bodega. Gloria's kind of the proprietor, and Lourdes is selling candles for fortune or prayer or good luck or whatever. Right. The guy comes in to get his fortune read on a job, prospective job he wants, or to get a better chance of landing this job.
Yeah. Lourdes is doing some kind of ritual thing where she sells the candle. And I don't know anything about that, but she sells the candles that you light the candles and do things with them. She was doing a cleansing on the man in the back where she was tapping him with some kind of branches that were twined together. And
cleansing, I don't even know. Somehow cleansing him of some kind of bad luck or whatever.
Yeah, I don't even know what that stuff's called. Do you? That kind of...
Well, I think the general term they're throwing around is Santeria. Santeria is the system of beliefs that you rely on saints. I guess Santo is saint in Spanish, and so Santeria is a weird belief that you can work the magic and mojo of saints from the Christian theology of saints and what saints are bring you luck or bring you fortune or to work on your behalf.
Well, yeah, that kind of makes sense based on what Gloria was saying later on when she's talking in the kitchen to one of the girls, and she says it's like, she makes a reference to, she said, do you know anything about Catholicism or something? She's like, it's Catholic plus or something.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know. But that...
yeah, Santeria is supposedly mixed in with Christianity and the religion from African slaves when they were brought over and taken away from their religion. So they wanted to capture some of their old religion, and they, of course, got mixed in with our society and Christianity. And that's how this whole Caribbean / African / New World Santeria belief came in.
Okay.
But anyway, I think that's what Tia Lourdes is working here. And it's a semi-scam, semi-religion. It's, you know, it's hard to believe that it's real, right?
I don't know.
You're in.
I mean,
you're in.
I'm. Well, no. I mean, it's certainly not my religion, but you know, I mean, I try not to say anything negative about anything that people view as their religion.
Well, so. This is a podcast. You got to let loose.
That's how I feel.
But it's a money. It's a business in this little bodega. Gloria's running the front business, selling good food goods and scamming welfare cards, while her aunt is in the back scamming people with Santeria, or at least getting money from people to do Santeria.
Well, every action that they've shown so far that had to do with Gloria and the candle lighting and all that kind of stuff has come to pass, right? In their favor, in a way?
Well, roughly, I guess.
Okay.
The guy didn't get his job.
Well, he filled out the application and laid it beside the candle. And
then Gloria, if you got the magic, you don't have to deliver the resume. If you got the Santeria magic going for you.
Gloria was like, so you did take another resume and turn it in, right? And he's like, he stood there for a minute, like with this deer in the headlights looking. He goes, that wasn't in the instructions.
Yeah, so this basically, this guy's an idiot. He wants to get a job, so he goes to Lourdes to get the Santeria mojo going for him. But he doesn't even turn in the application and resume to get the job started. He just hopes that the Santeria will work for him.
Yeah, he actually takes the resume or the application and lays it beside the lit candle and keeps the candle lit for 7 days. Then he's mad that he didn't get the job, and yeah, he never even applied for the job.
So he's basically an idiot. He's an idiot for doing that, and I think he's an idiot for believing in this Santeria stuff. I'm sorry for all of our voodoo Caribbean, North African / New World religious people who believe in Santeria, but I don't believe in it.
Well, it's not my religion either. But
so, Michelle, did you grasp the math of the food stamp scam or the welfare card scam on your first take of this episode?
Yeah. Did you?
No, I actually had to watch it. I did like go and review it to capture the economics behind what was going on. So why don't you explain it? You got your arms around it.
Well, the guy comes in and he wants to buy. He gets a beer and he puts down a food stamp card, an EBT card, and she goes, "You can't pay for beer with food stamps." And he goes, "Oh, come on! If there's $100 on the food stamp card, everybody knows what you do, and if you'll give me $50, you can have the card," essentially. And so she makes a big deal out of covering up the card. You know, she goes, "We do not do that here," because she's like putting on a show for both Arturo, which is her boyfriend, and Francisco, who is the angry guy who's still waiting to talk to the candle to Lourdes in the bag. And she's like, "We do not do that here. I don't know what you've heard." And at the same time, she's taking his EBT card, his food stamp card, and she's giving him back $50 for the $100 EBT card. And she's giving him $50 cash, minus, of course, the price of the beer.
Right. So she can turn in the $100 EBT card and get that from the government later, and she's only giving out $50.
Right.
So this has some darker repercussions because, of course, the guy who wanted the job overhears all this and sees that it's kind of a scam, right?
Yeah, we didn't know that at the time that it happened. I couldn't tell that he heard, and she seemed to put on a pretty convincing show, and everything she said was kind of soft to the guy as far as to let him know. But yeah, it does kind of, because how did he hear her if Arturo didn't hear her?
Yeah.
And Arturo didn't hear her.
I believe that, though. I believe she communicated to the guy, but the people she didn't want to hear it kind of overheard enough that they kind of were on to her.
Well, and plus, this other guy's been in there before. This Francisco has been in there before because he's come in to get the candle.
Yeah.
So,
and then we also see this whole whisper to the person you want to hear it, but blatantly, loudly say the thing for the broadcast to the rest of the people around. You see that later on in the episode with Caputo, right? Where he's talking to Fisher about, "We monitor everything. I know none of this shit works, so don't." So it's kind of an exact same copy of it with the prison as the audience.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, you're right.
So back at the prison, we see that they're having a bang-off. Not a rape contest, but a bang-off.
That's what they say.
We see Chang's the Asian woman who kind of runs the commissary. How did she get in charge of this bang-off?
I think they just needed a a scorekeeper, and somehow she...
They could have got crazy for that. She runs the clock and the other one.
Yeah, but Crazy Eyes, I don't know. That's a good question. Crazy Eyes isn't homosexual, and Nikki and Boo are, and I think Chin is supposed to be too, right?
Chang?
Is it Chang? I thought it was Chin.
I thought it was Chang.
Okay, I don't know.
First of all, I don't know that Nikki's homosexual. I think she's acting that way in the prison.
Oh, I thought she just was.
It doesn't matter, I guess, but...
Okay.
I just wondered how Chang or Chen got to be the commissioner of this league.
I don't know.
But she does lay out the rules. it has to be on campus. It has to be real girls. And Boo, of course, we now realize the truth about Boo, because Boo says, because they look at Boo like, it has to be real girls. Like, little Boo wasn't a girl. It was a dog.
Yeah, but hopefully not. No, because she says, that's not a problem. It only happened one time and we were drunk.
Yeah, so what did she mean?
I don't know. Well, maybe it's something else that they know.
You sound hopeful, not sure.
I'm clinging to that hope. Although I don't know what I'm clinging to, because if you say it has to be human, then I don't know.
And right on the heels of that, Boo says it only happened once.
I know.
But how do they get a dog drunk?
Oh, I don't want to talk about it.
And the next rule, they have to come for it to count. And
yep.
Boo brags, though they always do. That's not even a point for me. No double points for multiple orgasms. Has to be different girls for different points.
Yeah, and different girls are worth different points.
And Chang, of course, has a score sheet reflecting the points.
With their faces drawn on them.
So who drew that score sheet? How did that score?
I don't know.
Well, what do you think?
I guess Chang drew it, right?
Yeah, or maybe Flocka. Flocka seems to be the artsy, fartsy girl.
I don't think the Latinos or the black girls are in on this. I don't think they have anything to do with this. I think this is just the white girl thing.
Okay. Well, Chapman's pissed off that she's only a 3 out of 10.
Yeah. And that she should be higher.
Is that because she's easy or because she's homosexual, or why is she only a 3?
They say it's because that she's slutty, but she's not easy, and that she's the only person they know that slept with their worst enemy.
Yeah, Alex.
Even slept with their worst enemy. So I guess that's why her number's not higher. Because if your worst enemy can talk you into it, then come on.
Yep. So I guess there were a number of factors that Chang had put into the algorithm.
Yeah, they definitely gave it some thought.
So next we see rocket scientist Pennsylvania coming in and saying, what are y'all playing? And Nikki tells her the oldest game there is, Exclusion.
And poor Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. And Kentucky's right next to Tennessee, isn't it, Michelle? Haven't we been through this before?
Kentucky does border Tennessee.
So what's Exclusion? She doesn't even know what Exclusion is. Poor Pennsylvania.
Poor Pennsylvania. And she's grinning with her new teeth. She shows her teeth the whole time. She kind of hurts my feelings.
It's probably better to... She hurts your feelings.
Yeah, that kind of hurts. Because she's pitiful in a off-putting way. It's the kind of thing that I would say, oh, that's terrible. Bless her heart.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt your feelings. It's like seeing a puppy get run over on the interstate. It's like sad. Hurting your feelings is like, Michelle, you're only a 2 on the scorecard.
Yay, I'm not a 1. Okay. I don't know. Okay.
So I don't know if Nikki and Pennsylvania even get beyond this exclusion. Pennsylvania just blissfully, ignorantly just seems to breeze right through it and not care.
Yeah.
Or not know.
She doesn't know.
Next we see V holding court. About people should be nobody's doormat. I mean, the black girl should be nobody's doormat. And the Spanish are running things and they need to learn some manners. And she gets a little help from?
Crazy Eyes.
Because she knows the flatware layout, right?
I know where the fork's on the left. The salad fork's on the far left.
The little fork on the far left.
They need to learn some manners.
Yep.
That's some important stuff.
She's like deliciously childish.
Yeah, and very very basic. It's like she's very smart, but it's like everything she does, everything she thinks is just, it just takes it down to the ground. You know, it's just extremely, I don't know. There's nothing subtle in her thought process. Everything is just basic. If you say manners, it's just manners.
Nothing camouflaged. It's all just blatantly.
Right.
Blah. Here it is. We see Red building her greenhouse pipeline, but nobody really knows that it's a greenhouse pipeline yet, right?
No, they don't.
She's really the only one who understands it. And then Healy shows up to talk to Red. And Healy, I guess, and Red have this loosely handshake deal that he gets Russian girl advice from her. And
right.
She gives him, or he gives her treats or whatever, I guess, favors.
Well, yeah, remember, I mean, he was the one who kind of turned his eye away from everything she was doing before. So.
Yep. So he wants this advice, and his girl is Katya?
Katya, uh-huh.
Katya, the Russian wife, mail order wife.
Mm-hmm.
He has really dumb questions for Red. Like, they're pitifully dumb. Should I go to the high school play? Should I go to the Indian restaurant for dinner? Just like any idiot guy would know the answers to these questions.
Yeah, he's so awkward with it. It's like he doesn't, I mean, how long have they been married now? Do we know? It's been a little while. I mean, several months at least, right?
I don't know. Are they even married or are they supposed to get married?
No, they're married. They've been married.
That's how she got here.
Yeah, and she's waiting. She said in episode one, I think, that she had to wait 2 years. I don't remember when she said it. She might have even said it later this time, but she has to wait 2 years to get her green card. And I don't know how long you have to be married in order to, you know.
Well, that's probably divorce. The answer, 2 years. She has to be married for 2 years before they give her a green card. That would make sense.
Yeah, but she is very unfond of him, and I think he's really trying to establish some kind of relationship with her. And he's going to Red because he obviously has no female friends. We find out he really doesn't have any male friends, and that was kind of sad. And this,
well, Red's a Russian. He's like going to the, he's like stupidly thinking, I'll go to a Russian girl for Russian girl advice.
Well, in season one, he had went to her, and she was teaching him, I think, how to speak, and she would also translate for him sometimes. So he would bring Katya in, and she would translate because they had a real hard time communicating. So,
but he doesn't need Russian girl advice. He just needs girl advice.
Or just to...
Common sense.
Man up and make some decisions here, maybe.
Skip the play, take her to dinner, and then I guess she kind of implies, don't take her to the Indian dinner. Take her to some nice romantic...
Italian or something. Yeah.
Candlelit place. Sure. All right, so now we go to the meeting room with the girl that I never can freaking remember, with the baby and the grumpy gang guy. Who's that girl?
I don't know her. I don't know.
You answered it for me before, I thought.
I don't know.
Anyway, she's got the little baby that the guy's taking care of on the outside, and she's in prison. And we also see Cal and Piper's mom.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like the first visit to Piper since the fight, because they haven't seen her.
Right.
And the mom is worried that Piper's not going to be pretty anymore.
Yeah, that's what she was concerned about over the whole thing. And of course, Cal was hoping for a scar or something, which is very Cal-like.
Still got plenty of time.
That's what she says.
Do you think they visit once a month?
They haven't shown that.
What do you think, though? They haven't
shown that. I don't think so. I don't think they do.
More than? I mean, more time between.
Yeah, I think there's more time between. Remember, at one point, Piper was talking to Red, and she was saying she hadn't gotten anything except a card from her grandma in over 2 weeks. And I don't think they do that. I think they do it when they have to. And she's just been in SHU for 3 weeks. And I don't know. No.
So, Lori, Piper's mom asked if Larry came to visit.
Mm-hmm.
And she, Piper says, no, mom, we're broken up. He wouldn't come. So she wants to help her find another man.
Mm-hmm. She's going to help her.
So Michelle from Tennessee, who's the girl in the lobby that wouldn't get past security?
That's Cal's wife.
And she didn't
Cal's girlfriend. I'm sorry.
Why didn't she clear security?
They just said that there was something with her background check. That's all they told us. So, I don't know. So, they left her out in the waiting area to hypothesize the penal system with all the other people that were in the waiting area.
It was a kid.
Great.
is a little kid. This room is too industrial. This room is so industrial. No wonder why our prisoners are, you know, hard to get back on track. And this poor little kid's looking at her like, what the hell?
Oh, I know. She's talking about how the building's probably part of the government's punishment. And if it is, kudos to the government that it reminds her of a high school building.
Yeah.
And how bad the oppressiveness and the low ceilings and everything. And just so animated. I think that was the best part about that. You would have had to have actually seen the scene, but just she's so animated with her big eyes and everything.
So this woman is a perfect match for Cal, who's like half off his rocker too.
Perfect. Perfect.
So they find out Cal makes Piper play charades with the fact that somebody's not there and her dad. Why isn't her dad there? And her dad's with her grandmother.
Right.
Because her grandmother is sick. But they make her guess all this. But so, Michelle, why is Piper's dad with Piper's mom's mother? That's her mom's mother, right?
It's not. I think we thought that at one point, but I think it's his mother.
All right. Well, that would answer that. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
But anyway, they make her guess all that, and she finds out grandma's pretty sick. Grandma scraped her foot and found out she had some bad
kidney issues, and then she got an infection when they started doing some dialysis on her, and everything just kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
And she guesses it because they won't tell her. They had decided, Cal and his mom, the Piper's mom, had decided not to tell her because they didn't want her worried. She's in there. She can't do anything about it. But since her dad didn't come, she was feeling like her dad just didn't want to see her. So they're like, that's not what it is, honey. That's not what it is. But they won't tell her anything. But Cal kind of turns it into a game, which I can totally buy. And he's saying, you know, guess. But if you guess, we'll let you know. And so she starts guessing houses burning down and all this kind of stuff. Her mom goes, honey, it's not property. And Cal's like, no hints, no hints. And so then she starts saying, is my dad dead? And Cal goes, no. You know, is he sick? No, he's not sick. And so they go into it. And so she's real excited. She's really playing into this game. And she's like, it's grandma. Grandma's dying. Grandma's dying. And Cal's like, yes, that's it. And they high five. And then she goes, oh my gosh, grandma's dying. And she realizes after this terrible game that she's had to play to find out this very serious adult issue, which was sad.
Yeah. I thought we kind of just covered all that.
Oh, okay.
You're going to plow through your notes no matter what.
No, I wasn't even looking at the notes. I was just
trying. I heard you flipping the pages.
No, just to keep up.
Okay. So we see Caputo telling Gloria that they can't use the other bathroom, right, anymore. Can't use this. They can't share the black girls' bath. Or black girls can't share their bathroom or what?
Caputo's just discussing that the B dorm bathroom, which was the black girls' bathroom, I think, and says that she should have asked before she took her girls in there. That's all. And so she asks if it's okay if they use that bathroom because they need to be clean to be in there doing the food, and he agrees, and I think that's it.
So Gloria wants a candle for her office or her workspace? She asks him for a candle.
She does.
So we see that she's still kind of tying back into the Santeria thing.
We see it all the way through this whole season. We see it in different ways.
And next we see Gloria and Tia Lourdes at the park. I still wrote down Gloria and her mom, but I'm convinced that's her aunt now.
Yeah, I think you're right.
How Arthur's been so good to them, but here's Gloria with a black eye and a split lip. And
okay, is it Arthur or Arturo? Because I put Arturo.
Arturo in Spanish, Arthur.
Oh, okay.
It's like
okay.
Miguel and Michael. It's okay. The Spanish version of Arthur. Or Arthur's the English version of Arturo.
I did not know.
But he comes to apologize. So give me the female perspective of all this, Michelle.
Well, we failed to mention in the last scene that he had overheard her being ugly, speaking harshly to the guy who was trying to give her the food stamp card. And he did not know what had transpired between her and the guy with the food stamp card. So he came up to her and chastised her and said she's never going to be successful if she speaks to customers that way. And she made some, you know, smart mouth comment to him about what does he know about success, and he smacked her. Smacked her in the face, and we failed to mention that part. So they're sitting in the park, Gloria and Tia, her aunt, Lourdes, and her aunt is telling her to stay away from this guy. She has to stay away from him. Of course, she has a black eye and everything. I mean, she's been physically abused, and she goes to talk to her aunt about how he has never hurt the boys or her sons or anything like that, and she would never be with anybody that would. And about this time, he comes up, and he's asking for forgiveness. I'm sorry, what were you asking?
Yeah, you're right. You're totally right about that. I actually made notes about that, and it's a really super important point. Glad you remembered it, that Arturo, when he overhears her yelling at the guy for the food stamp scam, tries to come up to her to give her business advice when she's, in fact, the mastermind behind this whole scam in the first place. And he's an idiot. Arturo is an idiot. Like, don't talk to customers like that. We need everybody to buy stuff from us. And then he slaps her, like, in front of everybody. And we think he's a pretty good guy. He's, like, helping her in the bodega. He's moving the heavy boxes. She's, like, appealing, you know, come on, honey, lift up those heavy boxes for me. So they look up to that point like they have had a really pretty good relationship.
Right.
But then he just lays back and slaps her after giving her stupid-ass advice. So that's really important. I'm glad you brought that up. So back at the park, we see now Gloria, we know, like we just said, with the black eye and the split lip. And then the kids even run up to Arturo. Hi, Arturo, whatever they say to him. So, you know, the kids like him, or he's got the kids to like him. But he's there to apologize.
Seriously apologize. He falls to his knees asking for forgiveness from her.
Yeah.
And, of course, Lourdes is in the background holding the boy's hands and praying.
Yeah.
Or reciting scripture over, you know, she definitely sees stuff that Gloria is too blinded to see.
Yeah, Gloria's sons are Julio and Benito, and Lourdes is like this beacon. She sees the whole thing, like, don't go to this asshole, he's just bad for you. And when she does go to him, he kneels down and hugs her and wins her over again. And I looked up the words that Lourdes was praying or saying, and it's a psalm. From
it is.
Psalm 91, verse 3 through 7. And it's about, I don't know why she says these words. Do you?
It's a psalm, and I did not look it up. I should have, but it's a psalm about how God protects us, I think, right? And from the bad of the world. And I think she was praying that over Gloria.
Right. He'll protect you under his wings. He'll be your shield and your rampart. And the little boys ask Tia, what are you praying for, Tia? And she says, to mama, your mom. Pretty strong stuff there for what's Lourdes going to do. She can't really do much if Gloria wants to stay with Arturo, right? The kids are in there making it more complicated. It's on a freaking playground, which should be a sanctuary to start with. I don't know. It makes you really kind of hate this Arturo guy even more. It multiplies how much you hate him.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we all have our own limits and stuff like that. But that's just something that it's not my thing, and I don't get that. I don't understand how you would let that back in your life. And I know people do, and I know they have a weakness for that kind of stuff, and I hate that. Raising daughters, I desperately hate that abuse. I just, there, you know, zero tolerance for that.
Yeah, there's no good light to shine on it. So back on more cheerful times, back at the prison, Bo brags about her conquests. And Nikki, we hear the name game of there's plenty of sluts in low self-esteem city.
Booze. She says nickel slots or nickel sluts. What does she say?
Yeah, well, she gives there's a couple casino references here.
Right.
Casino slots, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Nickel slots, I'm sorry. And then Nikki says, well, there's plenty of sluts in low self-esteem city. Like, come on, boo, you can get whatever you want from this poor choice of women. But Nikki says she's playing for big money at a private table from now on.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikki's game, or her plan at least, is to work in on Fisher. And she kind of prompts this in front of Boo by having Fisher change the TV channel or volume. And compliments her on how nice she looks and all this bullshit.
Yeah, and Fisher is so sweet and so nice to everybody. And she just kind of grins and kind of takes it all in and everything, which, of course, fuels Nikki. And then Nikki turns around and says, it's an art form.
Yep. I'm not after some sweaty fallopian relay race.
Yeah, but she does realize, I think, that Boo is up on her already.
Yeah, 5-0, right?
I don't know if she is here. I didn't put that down here. I don't think she's that far ahead here, but she's already up on her. So I think that plays out a little bit later.
And Nikki claims to be the sexual Steve Jobs. So she's... She's the successful entrepreneur of scoring on women in prison and sex off contests.
Okay.
So we see Healy's plans from all of his advice from Red with the Russian wife. He's made big plans at the spaghetti factory, Michelle.
Well, that's Italian, Rod.
Hardly, but I guess so. Spaghetti's American, isn't it?
I don't know.
But we do see the bitchy-ass gold digger Russian wife who is really unattractive. She's just like a gold digger. And then Healy is fueled by
this. That's not a gold digger. How can that be? Healy has no gold. Maybe
He's got the
passport digger.
That's the gold, yeah.
Okay.
He's got the right for her to become an American citizen.
Okay.
And then that fires up Healy's crap-ass side where he's yelling at her. I think almost rightfully, but his anger gets the best of him. So they're both of their bad sides come out. And he speaks to her in Russian to try to be sweet to her, and she still doesn't respond. She's there with her friend, right?
Yeah, she is.
So, Michelle, who's sadder in this whole mix, Healy or the wife?
Oh, Healy's sadder. The wife has a plan and a goal to get what she wants, and she's already put it in action and she's headed in that direction.
But who's the sadder person? Who's the most reprehensible person?
Reprehensible?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I think she's definitely more reprehensible. I mean, I don't know, Mike. I mean, he used her, I guess, right? I mean, maybe for more socially acceptable, noble reasons of, you know, wanting to not be alone or wanting to have this connection with somebody. But she's using him for nothing, just to get here and then to leave him. And she's not even, I don't know, she's not even nice. I don't know if that would make it better, but
I don't know. Some of those Russian mail order brides are so damn easy to fall in love with.
Are they?
But anyway,
tell us your story, Mike.
I think they're both pretty equally rotten because Healy's a loser, man, and she's a gold digger, and they're
loser doesn't make you rotten.
Yeah, I know, but he's got a bad side to him that she brings out by being mean to him, and he gets mean really quickly right back to her.
Healy definitely. We've seen Healy have his bad side several times. There's no question. I mean, when he allowed everything that went on between Piper and Pennsylvania and all that, Healy definitely has some kind of weird thing going on. But I think Healy wants to be good. I get that impression from his character. Healy wants to be a good guy, but he's so lonely and he's so lost that nothing he does works. Nothing he does helps the women in the prison. They don't care. They don't allow him to get into their minds and their psyches. Nothing he does gets himself close to his wife. The only way he can get anything, even from Red, is, like she said, scratching her back. You know, I mean, nothing the man does works. But I think he wants to be. I don't think Katya wants to be a good person.
Yeah. So to cheer things up again, back at the prison, and you know, it's the second time I've said this, it's kind of a joke, but it is kind of interesting that the things happening outside the prison in real life are almost more bleak than things in the prison.
Well, that's a good point.
But in the prison, Daya observes that the water pressure is better in the prison, or is better in the hood than in the prison.
Yeah. And in, oh, I thought she said in the ghetto.
Whatever. Meaning
the ghetto bathroom, I thought is what she was saying.
Yeah, but the water pressure sucks so bad in the prison that it's better in the ghetto than in prison.
Okay, I thought that what she was saying was that the water pressure in the black girl's bathroom.
Oh, maybe.
Was so better.
Yeah, maybe that might be the point. I was just thinking she thought when I was in the ghetto outside in real life, this was...
No, I think she was saying that the water pressure was better in the black girl's bathroom, and why did they have the crappier bathroom?
Yeah, you're right, because the next thing she says is that they're getting special privileges and we're the black people now.
That was a horrible thing to say.
Yeah, it's pretty true, though. So Gloria's bundle of shoes are all tied together by
everybody's shoes.
Black, Cindy, and Tasty.
And put on Gloria's bed as if to make some kind of statement. What does that mean? What kind of statement does that make?
We're in control of your feet.
Okay.
I don't know. We're fucking up your stuff.
Okay.
So Piper's sad. She's looking at a picture of her grandmother, and Red comes in, and Red tells her a sick babushka is nothing to be ashamed of. And then I guess Piper here tells the story of the scraped foot and the infection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all like dominoes. And then she makes a reference to Clive Owen in the movie Croupier that he says to hang on tightly and let go lightly. But Red says, fuck Clive Owen, just don't let go.
Mm-hmm.
Which advice do you think is the better advice, Michelle?
Reds,
bitch, please.
Don't you?
It depends. I mean, it's pretty good advice. Do the best you can to make your relationship work, but when it's time to let it go, you know, it's graceful.
Life's not graceful. Life's ugly and sticky and messy and...
Maybe in prison and in Tennessee, but I'm just trying to say what they're trying to say.
Okay. But we're talking about a grandmother relationship, too, so.
Yeah, but her grandmother's going to pass away, so she has to find a way to let go.
She does, but I got to tell you, I love Red's determination with that. I love her family connection. I love the way she is about her family and her protectiveness and her fierceness about that.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Her spunk is pretty cool, pretty attractive.
Yeah.
So we see the plumber going through the pipes in the shower room or the bathroom. They're full of shit and effluvia. And they need 80 grand worth of repairs.
At least.
And Fig, the assistant warden, says the best thing we can do is shorter showers, or that's what the plumber tells her would solve it. And she's like, well, that seems reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So here we get the hint, I think, that shortly hereafter we see the commercial for Fig and her husband running for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the clue that the money she's scamming from the prison is going to his campaign.
Okay.
I don't
honestly remember when I first got that. So, you know, I've seen it, the whole thing, so many times and watched it in so many different orders. I don't know, but maybe. Yeah.
So Piper goes to Healy to ask for a furlough to see her grandmother, and Healy says there's nothing I can do. So here I need your input on this, Michelle. Why did Healy... Okay. Piper accuses him of just standing by and then giving Pennsylvania new teeth after Pennsylvania was almost ready to kill her.
Right.
So do you think Healy has to be nice to Piper to shut her up, and that's why he's helping her with the furlough?
I don't think he has to be. I think Healy's got enough of his bases covered that he's going to be okay whether or not he does. But like I said, I think Healy wants to be a good guy. Healy wants to be a hero to people. And I think when she brings up that Pennsylvania, you know, she's like, you just stood there. You just stood there and she could have killed me. And he's like, Pennsylvania will say that I was nowhere around. That didn't happen or whatever. But I think he wants to make it up to her.
He just wants her to like him.
Yeah, I think he wants to be liked. I think we see that play out later on in this very episode. I think he wants to be liked. And he wants to make it up. He wants to do what he can to make up what he did. That's how I took it.
Yeah, I guess Healy's kind of a simpleton, right? Simple things make him happy. He sees the band and he's happy for that. And at the end of this scene, he like taps the little bobbleheads like, ooh, that's funny. I watched that little bobblehead.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a simpleton.
Yeah, he's pretty easy. He's pretty easy, which is surprising to me. Why Katya, who is a woman who's obviously manipulative, wouldn't manipulate that more. Him being the way
he is. Well, she probably is.
Maybe, yeah. You're right.
You got to be pretty enterprising to be a Russian woman to leave your country and to pull a scam on a guy to come and get a green card. And then she has to come up with a further plan, right? If she's going to move away from Healy to start her life in America.
Yeah, but who knows? I mean, who knows what kind of education she has or anything? We don't know much about her. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, meaning that she could have a lot of education.
Yeah, she could.
So next we see Fisher and Nikki kind of overhearing phone calls from people. And one of the phone calls is this woman talking about a wrestling match. Did you catch the details of that?
That woman has talked about the wrestling match so many times. This woman has never been on the phone that she has not been crying. She cries every time she's on the phone. My daughter and I, when we watched it, noticed that. And she's always has the tissues. And the few times that Piper or anybody else is crying on the phone, she's the one handing them tissues because she's crying. I didn't catch the specifics of the wrestling match.
So she's spoken about this wrestling theme in other episodes in the first season, too?
Not about this particular wrestling, but speaking about wrestling, I believe so. Yeah. Yeah, she talks about wrestling a lot. So
that's a good catch because this is the first I remember of it. But she's talking about some guy named the Black Scarecrow. And if you bring your own chair to the match, you win every time. Like, bring honor back to the family. So apparently one of her family members is a wrestler that needs to get a bout with the Black Scarecrow and bring the right chair and win it and get honor back to the family.
If I remember right, she's always talking about trying to give advice on how, I think it's her son, can bring honor back to the family through wrestling.
Through you'll professional wrestling.
Yes. You'll have to, or who knows if it's even professional. Maybe it's like semi, is there semi-professional wrestling?
No, it's all on the up and up. It's all professional.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, Nikki proposes sex to Fisher where the cameras don't work, and Fisher finally catches on that Nikki's putting the moves on her.
She is completely offended.
Why?
I think because she didn't think that's what it was.
So she feels stupid.
And suddenly it dawns on her that that's what she was doing, being nice to her. Nikki was being nice to her for sex. Just like girls do with guys. You know, if you think a guy's being nice to you and then you find out he's only being nice to you because he wants sex, it's kind of offensive. I think she kind of feels the same way.
Yeah, it's also the prisoner blurring the line of like, I'm a prisoner, you're a guard, but we could be together. And the guard doesn't like that because it's stepping up to a level that they feel they should enjoy over these prisoners, I think.
Well, it's kind of like what you brought up earlier.
Yeah, exactly. So the Latinas are serving salty chili food from the kitchen. The Latinas are giving them like spiced up food to the black girls.
Yeah, way over salted.
And but Crazy Eyes has a way to overcome that. She just pretends that salt is sugar.
She does. It's all in the mind.
And they say that they're doing that because they know that blacks have a propensity for high blood pressure with too much salt in their food.
Yeah, they're just trying to kill them.
So to get even for that, a black girl trips Daya and Bennett stands up for Daya, the guard Bennett. And I guess Daya's mom is who? What's her name?
Alita? Is that right?
Alita. So she tells Gloria that all the blacks are starting shit and they have to deal with that now.
Well, yeah, and we find out it's Janae that tripped Daya. And she had asked her for another tray. She said she wants a tray of edible food. And Daya's like, you get what you get. And so she trips her. And so, you know, Bennett, he throws Janae to the floor. He really is very aggressive with her. And then he takes away her commissary for a month. And I bring that up because it'll play out a little bit later.
What is it a little bit later?
Well, a little bit later, they're talking about how the black people are punished more harshly for the things that they do. You know, like the Latina people can feed them inedible food, but if they even trip somebody, then they get more privilege taken away or something like that.
Yeah, harsher punishment.
Uh-huh.
So we jump back to the flashback of the bodega. And Gloria's ready to make the split from Arturo and run with her money.
Yeah, well, right, because he's now hit Benito.
Yeah, he's ramped it up even worse.
Yep.
So she's going to go to Florida and stay with Frankie and Rita. And but Arturo kind of shows up as she's pulling the money out and explaining to Lourdes what she's going to do. And he's lo siento again. I'm sorry again. But he trips over the candle box on the floor. It's kind of a Chekhov's candle box,
mm-hmm.
implying future problems with fire. But Lourdes says she's feeding the Orishas. I didn't look up Orishas, but apparently it's some spell to put on Arturo to take him back in to Santo Domingo.
Yeah, I didn't follow all that, honestly. I mean,
it's a plot. It's a threat, I guess, that Arturo, you're going to get your ass dragged back to Santo Domingo, where you're from, which is the capital of the Dominican Republic. And she calls Arturo a racist name, Beaner, which is a Mexican racial slur. And he kind of says, I'm not a Beaner. I'm from the Dominican. I'm Dominican. But,
yeah, but she says it's meant to be a hateful thing, not a accurate.
Right. My goal is hate towards you, not accuracy, pretty mm-hmm. much. She also says, well, he says, well, I didn't mean to hit the kid. It was an accident. She's like, well, who were you trying to hit? She catches him. She's so smart. He's just an idiot. But we see outside the door that there's some cops out there. And did you get faked out by these cops at first, Michelle? I did.
Well, yeah. I thought that Gloria had called the cops on him. Like,
or Tia did.
If he hit her kids. Well, Gloria had just came in. She had just came in, like, you know, rushed in with the boys to get this money. So I didn't think Tia had time to call the cops. But I thought Gloria had maybe before she got there. But they're outside, and he sees them, and then he starts yelling that he's going to kill her. And he takes off running out back. And she's telling him she didn't call the cops. And then we find out.
Right, so they arrest her for fraud for the false welfare cards and stuff.
Right, they were in there for her, not him.
And we find out that the job guy, the candle guy,
Francisco,
had called the cops because he didn't get the job.
Yep. Yep.
So Lourdes is going to light a new candle to the Saint Santa Barbara. I guess that's a double. It's a redundancy, but Santa Barbara to destroy him for this. But he's not worried because her candles don't work.
Yeah, he tells her she better buy her candles somewhere else if she's going to do that about him.
So he was just spiteful, and he took this woman out of her family by having her arrested just because he didn't get the job he wanted to get.
Okay, I thought it was candle to St. Barnabas.
Barbara, I think.
Okay.
Santa Barbara, St. Barbara. Now we see Caputo's band.
Well, yeah, Healy goes into this bar, and he's like, I picture Healy has just had this fight with Katya, right? And she wants to spend the time with her friend. And she just told him, too. When he's speaking to her in Russian, he's like, your friends are my friends. Because he says, just bring your friend along. Just go with me. I just want to spend some time with you. But he's so condescending to her, you know, when he says, it's not like you have to go to a job or anything. He's so ugly to her at the same time. But anyway, he says, your friends can come. And then he's like, your friends are my friends. My friends are your friends. And she looks at him. She goes, Sam, you don't have any friends. And that's the last we see in that scene. And so he goes, I'm picturing in my mind, then he goes out to the bar and he goes in there and orders a drink. And he's sitting there and he happens to see Caputo up on the stage playing, it's the bass, right?
Yep.
Yep.
His band is Side Boob.
I know. Yes, it is.
And eventually we hear Luschek say, probably in the next couple episodes, whatever, that Caputo, because he's wearing a scarf across his forehead and stuff. Or his hat. He's wearing like the wool cap, I guess. He's like, you look like the gay edge. But Michelle, there's really a Side Boob band with a couple songs on it. And you can look at it and hear it on YouTube.
Really?
So they really made a, for I don't know, for the show or if this guy, this actor who's Caputo is really in this band. But there's really a band called Side Boob with some songs.
So okay, I'll put the I've link. Told you. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
You told me what?
No, well, I've told you that I like Caputo. I really like Caputo. And I'm not like a groupie musician follower or whatever, but he had a little something going on here. Caputo's a little sexy here.
So you're a Side Boob fan?
Well, I don't know about the music so much, but I'm definitely a Side Boob bass fan.
So you like Caputo's look as the gay edge?
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it.
All right.
Sorry. Sorry.
I'll give you one last chance to have me edit that out.
No, I liked it. I like what I like. I liked it.
All right, back at the prison, V's team is plotting strategy, and V's pretty much imploring them to be angrier.
Yeah, she really is very antagonistic with these girls. She points out the injustices to everything. And there's always going to be injustices, but and things that you can read that way, even when they're not necessarily. And she makes it a point to point it out and talk about in the old days, you know.
Yep, so Gloria comes in on their meeting and asks for V to talk to her in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see some Machiavellian discussions on that.
Yep.
But back at the bar, Healy and Caputo are discussing song meetings. I guess it's a break for a Side Boob, and Caputo's having a beer with Healy.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where they see the ad on TV. I guess this is where I got the idea that they're going to have, you know, that somewhere this guy's running for Congress and he's got a shitty ad. Or what's he running for, a representative or Congress?
Yeah, I think it's state senate maybe or something. I'm not sure. Yeah.
So, and he's bad at it, and his commercials are bad. And so they're making fun of the commercial. They're making fun of Figueroa. And it just made me think that the money, she's taking the money from all this and running her husband's campaign with it, pouring money into that. But they call Figueroa the cunt-faced witch monster. So they're not impressed with her looks either.
Behind every good man
is a cunt-faced witch monster.
I think that's what they said, yeah.
She's unfortunately not good-looking. I know you said she's wonderful and all that, but I don't think she's at all good-looking.
I don't think she's that bad. I think
she's hideous. Bad.
I don't hideous. Think so. That's mean. Why would you say
it
that?
It is mean, but it's true.
But this is where Healy comes up with that comment where he says he hates talking about women issues to women.
I used to be able to talk directly to the warden, and now I have to talk to a woman about woman's issues. That's creepy. Like, why is that creepy? That's perfect, right?
Yeah, I mean, but not her, because she's horrible. But, yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be creepy unless he's just so awkward that he can't talk about women's issues with a woman. And then if he is, he shouldn't be there. Come on.
Yeah.
It's a woman's prison. But,
So then we hear Caputo talk a little bit of soul searching here about how he just wants the women to be taken care of, to be safe and clean. And Healy waters that down to be, well, yeah, they should at least be clean.
And then they even water it down further to the women that cook their food should be clean.
Healy does, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, And Caputo here shows that side again where he seems like he's a good guy. He tries.
So why do you think they did this scene? Why do you think they made Healy look bad and Caputo look good?
Well, I think they've done that from season one, episode one. But I think what they were showing is this. Katya had just made a point that Healy doesn't have any friends. And I think we find that Healy probably doesn't have any friends. As the episode goes on, he really latches on to Caputo with this. And Caputo's like his guy friend. And he brings it up later on. And almost to the point, well, not almost, definitely to the point of making Caputo feel a little uncomfortable about it. So I think they're just showing us that Healy does not have friends. And so we get to see him latch on to the first bit of friendship, bit of camaraderie that he's shown.
So it's an internal view on Healy's psychosis or psyche? Or
I think so, with the, you know, little side ad thrown up. That
side
gives
boob.
Them lots to talk about. Inside boob, yeah. But the ad thrown up that they get to talk about Figueroa as well and kind of share their troubles with her.
So he just wedges his own personal shortcomings and needs into the whole scenario of making Caputo his friend and
right.
Side boob Tuesdays, woohoo. He's all happy about it later.
I know. And Caputo's just like, yeah, whatever.
So back at the prison, V's pretending to be afraid of Gloria as they have their little talk about the resetting the work assignments. And V is setting up Gloria to get what V wants out of it. She's smarter than Gloria, better planner, and just moves like three or four chess moves ahead of Gloria.
Yeah. The interaction between V and Red knows V, and still I felt like Red kind of bought in to her for a while at the beginning. Gloria doesn't know V, but Gloria buys into that. Red, V, and Gloria, I think we have to say, are the leaders of these individual groups of girls. And I just can't picture Gloria being that gullible. Not that gullible. V really overplayed that hand, and I would be surprised if Gloria were that gullible in that situation.
Well, I see Red and V as major leaguers, and Gloria as a minor leaguer. I think she is.
I don't.
Well, she obviously does. That's what the show wants to tell us, right? That she's been outsmarted a little bit by V here. And Red even comes in later and puts her stamp on that.
Yeah, but only because Red has had Red trusted her to begin with, too.
Still,
remember?
She knows from experience, but still, she's a notch above Gloria.
Well, right. But knowing from experience isn't the same thing as just not buying into something.
I think it is. If you're a pitcher in the major leagues and you know how to strike people out, you know, it's not just your innate talent. It's like your knowledge of how to do things.
I guess. I just want Gloria to be... to not fall for that quite as readily as she does.
Well, she learns quickly. She's smart, but she's not quite at their level yet.
Okay. Well, that's fair, I guess.
So next, Piper meets Healy, and he's going to try for that furlough. Nothing is for free. He just doesn't want her against him, I think, and that he's, like you, maybe you said, he's just trying to add another friend into his mix.
Yeah, and then he brings up the words, and I'm not sure about this, but he's like, she's walking out the door, and she's very grateful to him and everything, and he likes the gratitude, too. Have you noticed? He really likes the gratitude, and there's something about that that's a little bit creepy to me. He likes to bring them in and give them the donuts, and he like, you know, secretly, and he likes to have his little safe group meetings and give them treats and take away one of their shots. Healy likes gratitude. But anyway, Piper's walking out, and he's like, Chapman, I'm responsible for you.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how I felt about that. I thought that might have had a little bit more oomph to it than...
You think he meant, like, so let me be responsible, so trust me and fall into my care?
Maybe. It just felt a little off to me. Maybe it was just me, but...
So next we see Chang. We should find her damn name.
Well, but first, this is where Chapman walks out and Caputo walks in, Right there.
Right, and that puts the cap on V's deal. He's getting the women moved from... Essentially, V's infiltrating the kitchen.
Yes, yes. And the custodial, too. Remember, she wants her guys in custodial.
Because, so they can move around more.
Right. Well, remember what they end up doing later on, which we won't go into, but they end up really doing a lot of product...
Yeah.
Product storage and stuff there. But this is also where Healy starts yelling side boob Tuesdays and all this. And he's really going on about how he and Caputo are now friends. He really makes a big deal over that chance encounter. So I'm sorry.
Isn't V's plan too to also move a couple, like she separates Pousse and Tasty by this move too. Like, cause she doesn't move them together. She separates them.
Ooh. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Pousse and Tasty work together in the library right now, and you're right, because she moves Tasty and one of the other girls to custodial, and I know she needs them there because that's where she ends up setting up her operation later on, but I didn't think about her separating Tasty from Pousse. You're right.
So next we see Chang is reporting scores on the sex off. Here's where we jumped ahead a little bit. So Boo is 5, Nikki 0. And it's because somebody's spreading rumors about Nikki and her gonorrhea or something.
Oh, no. I think Nikki was saying, Lorna was telling Nikki that maybe she could start spreading that about Boo. That's okay. What I thought. But yeah.
So how did Boo get ahead of Nikki?
Boo has gotten ahead of Nikki because Nikki's wasted all this time on Fisher and she hadn't went after anybody else. Nikki's playing the big tables, and Boo, I think, has 5 ones, I think is what
nickel slots. So she's jumped ahead with some nickel slots.
Low self-esteem city, yeah.
Now Lorna's bounced back pretty swimmingly from her last episode. Almost like too quickly. She's all cheerful.
No, she always does that. That's her mo. That's what she does. She's sitting in a courtroom with all this stuff going on around her, and she's sitting there with that sweet smile and her little hands out, saying that, oh, they're making a big deal. That's what she does.
So that's part of her social illness, you think, that she's just...
Absolutely. I don't think she's bounced back at all yet. I think she's just playing her role.
And you said before that Nikki and Lorna had a relationship before?
They sure did.
So she slaps her on the butt, and they seem pretty pal, pretty...
Yep.
Cheerful together. Now Fisher sees Caputo in the hallway, and so I need help understanding this one too. So this is a surveillance fake out that we talked about, where all the cameras do work, and, he whispers to her the truth, right. And that we do listen in on every conversation. He whispers the truth. We don't really. And then she says, "But we could, because I speak Spanish. Yo hablo español."
Yo hablo español muy bueno.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so she joes hablo español. I speak Spanish muy bueno. it's pretty much showing that she doesn't speak it very well by those very words. But she does Fisher just get off on eavesdropping?
Yeah, I think, she's, I don't want to say bad stuff about her, but I think she's heard half of the conversations and she wants to hear the other halves.
Yeah, she's nosy.
Yeah.
Why don't you want to say bad stuff? It's a TV show.
I know.
You're a critic of this show.
I am, but I don't know that, so I don't want to say it if I don't know it.
You might hurt Fisher's feelings. She's a fictional character.
She is.
I think she wants to eavesdrop more than she has been able to, and she wants the inside dope so she can get off on being snoopy with people.
Well, right. And I mean, she gets like this sanctioned eavesdropping on these people.
Right. We see her later on.
Where she's only got to hear half of what they've said so far. So you would want to hear the other half. I mean, I guess.
So later, we see her later on with recordings, right? It's not really the live. She's listening to
she's sitting in front of a computer and she gets to listen to the whole conversation. Not that I would want to listen or anything.
Right, but it's a recording. It's not the live. It's the computer.
Right.
The digital recording of it.
Right.
just for the fun of it, not for any reason to solve a crime or to catch someone. It's just
right, not because anything's going on and they need to hear it or any of that. Just so she can hear the whole of the conversation in place of a half. Yeah.
So Larry gets a call from Piper, and Larry, I think, is representing us, the viewers. We're on the outside watching this prison show, right, Michelle? And we're the outside people, and we're able to have the bag nuts and the coffees and all the, you know, whatevers that outside free people can have. And Larry kind of represents that in the show.
I guess that's fair. I don't like to think Larry represents anything that has anything to do with me, but I guess that's
fair. But his scene on the street, I mean, he's freely walking down the street. He's free as a bee. It's pretty clear that that's like freedom, right? He can walk and do whatever. He can take the call. He can call somebody else.
Well, right. And I thought that what Piper said, that she's forgot what it's like to have all that freedom to waste. That's kind of profound.
I think that's the symbol, though. That's why he's not in a room somewhere. He's literally walking around free as a bee. So they reflect on their relationship and the past and present, and they kind of come up with this theme of, I missed you, I missed you too. And, you know, it's the mystery of I missed you too. What does that mean between people? If they missed each other, why didn't they communicate that?
Well, they did communicate it.
But I guess so. You have to trip over it to find it, though. I mean, if Larry's missing her, why doesn't he tell her?
Well, I don't know that Larry had a way to get a hold of her to tell her prior to this. And he asked why she hasn't called him.
But we know he hasn't gone to visit her.
No, he hasn't. But I think maybe hearing her voice maybe triggered that or something. I don't know. I don't know that I buy it completely. Maybe you miss what you had or what you think you had with somebody more than you actually missed the reality of it. I don't know.
So you have to hear it.
They were pining for one another. Did you? But it was a little odd. I did write that down.
Yeah, it was kind of a, I don't know. It was kind of a touch back on, like, hey, we used to be a thing, and now we're, you know, now I remember that fondly, like, just like you remember it fondly.
Well, right, but he's even bringing up that, you know, he wants to know why she didn't call him sooner and stuff like that.
But that's what you say when you're in a relationship. Like, why didn't you come see me? Why didn't you call me? I missed you. Why didn't you call me? You wouldn't say that to a breakup. You know, to ex.
No, that's what I mean. You know, it was a really odd conversation I felt like they had. And it was one that I was not expecting them to have. She was only calling him to tell him, in my recollection, that she was getting furloughed and she had to have an address that she could be reached at. And so she needed to call him to say, hey, they're going to put down your address or whatever is my address. And it turned into this whole weird thing between them.
So you think they're just thinking out loud? Like, she's talking, she's just, like, thinking out loud to herself? She's not really giving words to Larry? Because she says something about how, she wondered if she was the person who could be without somebody or something to that effect. And she's thinking out loud.
Yeah, well, what she says to him is that she imagines she can be this person who doesn't depend on anyone or let anybody depend on her. And she's kind of found out that's not the case. And...
Right, but those words aren't really to Larry. Those are just Piper thinking, holy crap, this is me thinking to myself.
Well,
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's
I don't think you are wrong. I mean, I think you're right, and I think it's her reflecting on the fact that she doesn't have Alex anymore, and that's just a couple weeks old, and all that. I think we're seeing all of this manifest in her. You know, she had Larry, and then while she still had Larry, she had Alex, and then she lost Larry, but she still had, you know, I mean, Alex back in, well, no, she didn't, because they just broke up, but her and Alex, but she's kind of had this dependency, and I don't know, but their whole miss each other was, I was not expecting it.
Yeah, I was just kind of wondering why they put it in there.
And it doesn't play out in any way that I remember from this point on, does it?
I don't know.
I mean, not to be like a spoiler or anything, but that comes to nothing. And I think going back and seeing it makes me even question it more than I questioned it at the time.
Again, so back at the prison, the black girls get the Latina shower, which is a shitty bathroom.
Yeah. Okay.
So why did they?
That was part of the thing.
I know. So what are the Latinas going to do?
The Latinas got their shower. The black girls' shower. They traded showers. That was part of the V Gloria interaction.
So that was V giving her people a shitty deal so she could get better transportation of her illicit product.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's a crappy deal to throw your own people under the bus for a 30-second stinky shower.
That's all she does is throw her people under the bus. As we start really seeing, I mean, that's all she does.
And Black Cindy can't even wash her twat in that amount of time. But that's what they got. Their champion V has won this for them. And now we go to the kitchen talk with the Latinas. And right. So this baby, who is this one-year-old baby?
It's the baby, right? It's the baby of the girl, isn't it?
The girl that I was asking you about earlier.
Well, it can't be because she's not a year old. Maybe it's one of the other younger Latina girls. I don't know because that baby's not a year old, I don't think.
And we see all kinds of bling that's around it.
Well, they're kind of doing their thing again, right? Because Gloria is lighting the candle for the baby. She's melted something down. I can't remember.
Crayons.
Crayons, okay. Yeah, and, you know, fashioned a candle to light for this baby for her first birthday because she's not going to get to spend it with her mama.
And she's concocting all sorts of prayer and booga booga. For Catholic Plus, here's where we hear Catholic Plus.
Right. That's where I got that from earlier. But, you know, she asked her, you know, do you believe in spells and magic? That's what one of the younger Latina girls asked Gloria. And Gloria says, I believe I need all the help I can get.
So instead of Santa Barbara for the curse on the guy who didn't get the job who got Gloria in trouble, she now has Saint Anthony for the baby. So Santeria, saint, everywhere there's a saint for something. Next we see Red reprimanding Gloria for letting V trick her. And mm-hmm. Gloria finally gets it. And she snuffs out the candle like, I knew this crap was bullshit all along.
That's not why she snuffs out the candle. She snuffs it. The girl wants to leave the candle going. She's like, can't we leave the candle going for the baby? And Gloria says, no, it's too dangerous. And then we flash to what happens and why Gloria thinks leaving a candle burning is too dangerous. Remember? Because we flash to Arturo sneaking into the convenience store. What did you call that?
The bodega.
Bodega? What does that mean? I don't know that word.
Convenience store.
Okay.
It's like a corner convenience mart in New York. You know, they call them bodegas.
Okay, I didn't actually know that. But
are you sure about that? I mean, we know he goes in there, and we'll get to that in a second. But I'm back on this little baby birthday.
Yeah, she just says this. She says the words, we can't leave the candle burning. It's too dangerous.
Yeah.
That's what she says. And then we immediately flash to that scene. So that's completely how.
But this was right after Red and Gloria. Red reprimands Gloria for like getting fooled.
Yeah, but yes, it is. But then Gloria turns around and says, we need to get ready for whatever meal is coming up. And then she goes to snuff out the candle. And the girl says, can't we leave the candle going? She goes, no, it's too dangerous. I thought she just didn't want to leave the candle unattended while they were doing something else. You could be right, but I thought she
Because Gloria never believed all the bullshit with Lourdes, right? She just thought, I'll let her do this. It makes a little bit of extra money. She doesn't believe in the Santeria crap. I didn't think.
I don't know. I don't know that they've shown us that. I know that.
Or Michelle, does it mean this shit is dangerous as in.
No, you're wrong. Oh, you're wrong. And I'd have
okay,
to
tell me why.
Well, because later on, when we see the mute girl taking the seeds out of the apple, do you remember that part?
No,
it's
you're
any seed. Well, it's a couple of episodes later. I don't want to spoil everything, but Gloria goes back to potions and taking hair and blowing stuff on, you know.
Yeah, people. But we might be losing people with that if they don't know either, because I don't even remember that, or the future. I don't remember that.
The future. She has not given it up. I'll tell you that.
Okay. Sure. Well, here's why I think she does give it up, because it's dangerous because, number one, Lourdes had the guy with the job think it was real, and he found out it was fake, and then that was dangerous to Gloria because he got her in trouble. That's one way it was dangerous. And I just think she realizes that if I believe in something that isn't real, like what V just told me, and I bought into it, and it's not really true, that was dangerous. I don't know. I took it as a sign as her being fooled by a false symbol of something.
Well, I appreciate all that, but she continues to do it.
All right. Promise. Did she really buy into it, though, when Lourdes was running the scam back in the day when she had the bodega that...
I don't know if she's bought into it or not. She even says right there, she even says, I need all the help I can get. So maybe it's even done as like a, you know how people do stuff when a cat crosses their path? Or I mean, you know, like a, what's the word I'm looking for when you're scared something's going to happen because you didn't do something.
Superstitious.
Yeah, superstitious. Maybe it's just even a superstitious thing with her, but I don't know how.
I think she's smarter than the whole Santeria deal.
She keeps doing it.
All right.
I promise.
Well, you can remind me in the future, but for now I'm going to think she gets the light bulb over her head for the real truth when Red, you know, snaps her back to reality. Like, you just got worked.
If you want to cut out what I tell you, I'll tell you exactly when she does it again.
You can tell me. It's fine. I won't cut it out. Why would I cut it out?
Because it'll spoil the whole thing.
Tell me. We're watching a show that's been exposed to the public.
The very end against V, when V hurts Red and the mute girl goes to get the apple seeds out to make cyanide to try to poison V, Gloria comes in and does some kind of spell where she uses hair and all this other kind of stuff, and she makes up something, and she's standing in the hallway and she blows it into V's hair, and then we see what happens to V at the very end. So,
all right, you might be right. I don't even remember that. I have to watch each one as we do these podcasts.
I have
to each watch each show twice just to get grasp on it. I don't remember one, you know, five or six into the future.
Well, I completely understand, but, you know, I have seen them so many times. Each one that I've seen at least four times. So, and I've just finished season two again with, you know, watching it with my daughter. So, my grown daughter. So, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
So she is definitely still into it.
So Arturo goes back to get the money and trips over the candle and lights the bodega on fire and locks the keys, leaves the keys. And did they put a new lock on a door at the very beginning or something?
At the very beginning, the first time we see him, he is chastising Gloria for leaving the back door unlocked. He says she's going to be robbed. And she says she has to leave the back door unlocked so her children can go up to the apartment or whatever. And he says they're going to be robbed and he's going to install a self-locking door.
Okay.
So he goes in to steal that box of money and leaves the keys on the counter and locks himself in that little back room of Lourdes where she has all the candles burning, trips over a candle, knocks the candle down, and he can't get out of the room.
Well, and then he like accelerates the fire. This guy's just a blithering idiot. He could have been able to put that fire out. He should have been able to bust through that door if his life is on the line.
It just doesn't take any time for that fire to completely overcome him, though.
I know, but come on. It's a cheap-ass bodega. You bust through the plaster wall. Your life's on the line. You're going to do more than just stand there and go, oh, fuck, oh, no, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, I don't think he realized it for a minute. I think he just realized he had knocked the candle over. Then he goes to try to put it out. Then he goes back and tries the door and realizes the door's locked. Then, you know, I mean, it was kind of like this whole progression of things. And by that point, it was just too much. But you might be right. I mean, you're a guy. You'd know, you know.
Well, what would you do? When you break and scratch and pound and...
I would try to get out that door much more than he does. I sure would.
All right, so that's the end of season 2, episode 5.
That's it.
Episode 6 is You Also Have a Pizza. And we will watch that together next week.
Yep.
Michelle, do you have any final thoughts on Orange is the New Black?
I'm completely thoughtless, Mike.
All right. Well, thanks for hanging in there so late.
No problem.
I guess we'll sign off. One thing I was interested in is some of the music they use in the show. And they have some pretty cool ending songs and beginning songs. And in this episode, they don't.
I will cut you! No, the ending music was like the Latino music, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. It was just different. This one just seemed like, because I have to find caps for the beginning and ending of the podcast. I use some of the music sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they have some very distinctive music.
They spoiled us last time because we really resonated with that music and maybe not so much with this. This seemed, I don't know Latina music that well, but this seemed just like generic Latina music. It may not be, but I completely get what you're saying.
All right, Michelle, do something for that throat.
I'll do my best.
And how do they reach you online, Michelle?
Michelle from Tennessee, or Michelle from TN on Facebook, Michelle from TN on Twitter.
At Michelle from TN, at
yep.
Scathing Tweets, Facebook
yep.
/ West Coast Project.
Yeah, Facebook / West Coast Project, and that'll link you to everything.
Yep, okay. Well, I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Mike.
Bye.
Bye-bye.